Good evening. Thank you for joining us for this Treasure Coast legislative preview on the eve of this year's Florida legislative session. For sure, the two big items this year will be the budget and redistricting. But a number of our legislators have issues they'd like lawmakers to consider. We'll speak with them this evening about the bills they've introduced. We did invite all of our legislators to participate, but not everyone took us up on that offer. We'll start this evening with Republican State Senator Joe Negron of Stewart. He's vice chair of the Budget Committee and serves on the Reapportionment Committee. Knowing it's going to be a busy session, he has his priorities defined.
Really three things this session. Number one is, because this is a reapportionment year, I want to make sure that the Treasure Coast continues to have a very strong, effective voice in both the United States Congress and in our state capital. So as we work through the once-a-decade redrawing of the legislative and congressional lines to make sure that our community has strong representation in Tallahassee and in Washington. The second area that I'm going to be focusing on very aggressively this session is our state budget. As you know, because of the economic challenges that we face in Florida, our state has had to learn to do more with less, just as Florida's businesses and families have had to. My work is primarily in the Health and Human Services part of the budget, which is about $30 billion of our $68 billion budget. And so we're going to aggressively this session look line item by line item through our budget and see if we can find tens of millions and perhaps even $100 million of spending that, when things are going well, maybe are justifiable and appropriate, but now, given our tight economic times, maybe there's some things that we could do without. Lastly, I don't think anything is more important in government, regardless of what your political party is or your ideology. Our fundamental system of government is that people, citizens, have a right to speak and to be heard when their money is being spent. So I have a bill that is the result of a court decision saying that with some special taxing districts that are spending public money, that the public has a right to be there and to, you know, observe, but doesn't actually have a right to speak and to be heard. And, of course, in the legislature, the public can be heard in our county commissions and local government, but with these special taxing districts, they have a little bit different rules. And my view is that if the public's money is being spent, and the public has every right to actually show up, to be informed, to speak their opinion, and that should always be protected. So,
I also see you'd like the education commissioner to be an elected position again.
Well, I would. I really think that we should restore public education to its preeminence on the Florida cabinet. You know, we have the commissioner of agriculture, our attorney general, our chief financial officer, so we've put agriculture and our state's finances and our legal department all on the cabinet, but education is no longer there. So I'm going to propose that we give the voters an option. It'll be up to them, and if 60% say yes, then we'll do it. If the voters say we'd rather not elect the commissioner of education, then I accept their verdict, but I at least want to give them the opportunity to weigh in on that issue.
Explain to me a little bit about the concealed weapons or firearms, the 998.
Yes, the concealed weapons change that I'm proposing is really very simple. Right now in Florida, you have to be 21 years old in order to get a concealed weapons permit, and I think that's fine. But we have our men and women in the armed services that are either in the armed services or they've been honorably discharged. And I feel like with their level of training and commitment that if they're at least 18, but they fall in the 18 to 21-year-old category, that they should be allowed to apply for a concealed weapons permit.
And just to move on to something of local interest here that caught my eye, a couple years ago, a friend pointed out to me, and this has since been remedied, but there was nothing in Vero Beach or Indian River County that had been named after Alma Lee Loy. And you'd like to see the bridge named for her.
Yes, and I'm working on that with Representative Mayfield. And I just think that given the life that was led and the contributions, I think it's an appropriate honor. And that's something that Representative Mayfield has really taken the lead on. And I'm going to work with her on the Senate, and we hopefully can get that done this session.
Senator Negron also has a bill which would create a statewide task force for prescription drug abuse and educating mothers on how prescription drugs may affect their unborn children. Next, we'll go to State Representative Gail Harrell of Stewart. She's a Republican and previously held the seat before taking a term off due to term limits. This is her second session back in the district seat, and she chairs the Criminal Justice Subcommittee, serves on the Health and Human Services Committee, as well as the Judiciary Committee.
Yes, I'm very excited about this coming session in that we'll have the opportunity to really do two major things. Number one is to do the reapportionment that is required by federal law, by statute in Florida. Every 10 years we must do this. So that's going to be probably the most consuming thing of the session. And then, of course, working again on the budget and trying to do a budget that's going to be responsible and help create jobs in the state of Florida.
What are some of the bills that are important to you that you've put your name on and you're going to try to get through?
One I filed and have already had a hearing on, which I'm very excited about, deals with sick leave for our district employees, school district employees.
Mm-hmm.
And there were several situations in Martin County. It's been an issue in St. Lucie County where members, people employed by the school district, mostly teachers, have had very difficult medical situations in their families, and either themselves or a family member. And as it stands now, other teachers, other district personnel cannot donate sick leave directly to them. And this would allow individuals to choose to make that donation to a faculty member or anyone employed by the school district on a one-on-one basis and give them, let them have their sick leave. It will allow districts to establish a policy to make that happen.
Sure. Okay. And what else is pending this session?
Then I'm doing another bill that deals with making sure our returning veterans and active duty personnel get appropriate credit at the college level, both the community college, state college, and university level for the training that they receive in the military. It is amazing what our young people learn in the military, the coursework that they take, and the extensive training they take. And this will require our universities and colleges to give appropriate credit for that. So when they come back and they want to restart their lives locally, they may have 2 years of college already under their belt from some of the training that they've received in the military.
And you said you had a third one?
Yes, I have a third one that is going to establish a public records exemption for surveys that are done by the Dental Association, the Florida Dental Association, that monitors all the dentists and licenses dentists in the state of Florida. And by allowing that, these surveys will, this is very confidential information that will be done on these surveys, and it opens it up for them to really, through their licensing process, be able to know how many dentists plan to retire, how many take Medicaid, a whole variety of things that will help us plan better to build our workforce in Florida and make sure that we have enough dentists out there.
And so, E-Verify verifies potential employees' citizenship status.
What it does is it requires employers to verify the citizenship status by using an online program that the federal government has that is extremely accurate. It takes about 30 seconds to do. Any new hire in the state of Florida will have to verify online through E-Verify. And I have two more that are in the works that are, well, one of them almost there on filing is I'm for Big Brothers, Big Sisters. I am a firm believer in specialty license plates. I think it's a wonderful way to donate and also advertise for your favorite charity. And Big Brothers, Big Sisters is one of my favorite charities. And I happen to be on the board in St. Lucie County, they're interested in doing a license plate, so I'm going to be a sponsor of that.
We've been speaking with State Representative Gail Harrell. Also with us this evening is State Representative William Snyder, a Republican of Stewart, who chairs the Judiciary Committee, is on the Appropriations Committee, and on the Joint Legislative Budget Commission. This is his last year in the House seat due to term limits. He hopes to deal with the issue of human trafficking.
Well, a couple of years ago, I actually wrote a bill, and it was signed into law, that outlawed smuggling humans into Florida. Oddly, before that, it was not a state crime. Now, what I'm doing with this next step is talking about the sex exploitation phenomenon that we see in Florida, where, by all accounts, the third or fourth largest offending state when it comes to human trafficking. But equally important, although it doesn't seem quite as egregious, is we're going after people that do the exploitation and trafficking with slave labor, which we think is a fairly substantial phenomenon in Florida.
And what would this particular legislation do to address that?
The bill's going to have three key components that don't exist right now. Well, first of all, we already discussed we're combining the two existing statutes to make it easier for law enforcement and for prosecution. Number two, we're going to, the bill, if passed, would make human trafficking an offense that can be investigated by the statewide prosecutor, and so therefore the attorney general would have a say in the statewide grand juries and statewide prosecution. We think that's important because these offenses almost invariably cross jurisdictional lines.
Mm-hmm.
They're moving from county to county, so we really did feel like we needed the statewide prosecutor. And then thirdly, and probably the crux of the bill, is we're bringing the penalties up to be equal with the federal penalties. Currently, there's strong federal legislation criminalizing human trafficking, but our state statute wasn't near strong enough, and so there is a tendency for local and state law enforcement to take their cases to federal court rather than state court. And we really feel that allowing the statewide prosecutor and the Florida criminal justice system to become involved in these cases will increase the levels of prosecution.
And for years, we have seen you, your name attached to an immigration policy, but not this year?
No, this year, it's my last year, and I think that probably that policy will take another couple of sessions. So Representative Gail Harrell is going to carry an E-Verify bill. I support her efforts. I'll stand with her on those. But my efforts this year will be directed towards the human trafficking component of this whole situation.
As you look back over the time that you served in the legislature, what are some of the things of which you're most proud?
I think, Jill, of all the things I've done, the one bill that I was able to pass that I know will save lives was the DNA bill. By rewriting Florida's DNA bill and making the collection of DNA a time of felony arrest rather than a time of conviction, we will identify sexual predators much faster. And you know, these are the people that are the serial rapists and the murderers that if we can identify them early, we can prevent one of these tragedies from happening. So to me, that's my signature piece of legislation.
And is there something you would have liked to have accomplished that just didn't quite get done?
You know, I feel pretty good, Jill. We were able to get a rewrite on Florida's background screening law. I was able to get a bill through that protected people during hurricanes from looting. I had a bill passed that completely rewrote Florida's gang bills. I have a bill that I really think was very helpful, and that gives victims of sexual violence more rights during the investigation. So it's just been a long string, I think, of successful law enforcement issues, which at the end of the day, I've always said, government exists for one primary reason, and that's public safety.
State Representative William Snyder of Stewart joining us for his last Treasure Coast legislative preview today. Our only Democrat this evening is State Representative Steve Perman of Boca Raton. He's the Democratic ranking member on the Health and Human Services Committee, and he has introduced a bill cleaning up some of the unintended consequences of requiring background checks for some workers.
They made it so that people with criminal background would be automatically excluded from employment in certain situations. And one of the areas that's affected by that is an area where, paradoxically, it benefits the place of employment that the individual has a criminal background. Now, I know you're confused by that.
Absolutely.
Right. In situations where former criminals do counseling work with other individuals who have come out of prison and are mainstreaming back into society, the fact that these individuals have had the experience of being incarcerated gives them an extraordinary advantage on explaining and supporting these individuals who have recently come out of jail. And it's not unusual in environments like the Lord's Place and other places like that, where they do, in fact, hire qualified professionals who have had the unfortunate experience of being incarcerated to do counseling work. Well, the way the verbiage was created in the original language of the bill, those people, even those who had been functioning in that role for 20 years already from decades ago having been incarcerated, would essentially lose their jobs.
And you've introduced a bill dealing with electrical contracting.
This electrical contracting bill specifically gives municipalities the authority, should they so desire, to have on commercial construction sites in excess of 5,000 square feet of new construction, that there be either a credentialed electrician doing the electrical work or an on-site supervisor that's a credentialed electrician supervising the work.
And that seems a little contrary to the push that's on right now to become more business-friendly and require less regulation.
Less regulation? Mm-hmm. Well, I'm glad you pointed that out, because in a way it actually does create a window for less regulation, because there is less of a need for multiple on-site inspections by the municipality to see that work is being done properly, because they will now have the confidence that it's a credentialed electrician doing the work.
You also have a measure about theft and senior citizens.
Okay, the theft offenses bill that I'm putting up now has to do with enhancing the procedures that are used by judges at sentencing for grand theft or fraud perpetrated against a senior citizen. Right now, the way the coding is done, C-O-D-I-N-G, the coding of procedure for sentencing is that while there is supposed to be an enhanced penalty for crimes against senior citizens, that is not the case. So what this essentially does is it enhances the sentencing of criminals who have been convicted of grand theft or fraud against our very vulnerable senior population. And this is done with the full approval of the state's attorney.
I guess many of us thought, since it was a specific charge, that it would carry a specific penalty.
It does. And what we're doing here is that, interestingly enough, the way the coding has been done, it is actually a lesser crime when perpetrated against a senior, and I'm trying to change it so that it is, in fact, an enhanced penalty if you perpetrate these crimes and are convicted of committing them against a senior citizen.
And I really like the special observation bill that you have on.
Yes. Yes, I have a bill that is designed to finally create in perpetuity an Everglades Day. And it'll be on April 7th of every year, which coincides with the birth date of Marjorie Stoneman Douglas,
right. Who
is the individual who probably is as synonymous as anyone with paying attention to this very precious natural resource, the American Everglades. And it is in conjunction, as I would mention, that I have also recently formed the Everglades Caucus for the first time, which has members from both parties in both chambers of the legislature to focus on issues of intelligent use and restoration of the Everglades resources and creating a forum whereby the different individuals who have interest, both from the agricultural community, from the water management districts, from the environmental community, can all have a place to gather and present their points of view before the legislators, not in the strict confines of a committee, but rather in a caucus, so that those members of the legislature that don't serve in committees directly affecting these can still have input and can still have a better understanding of how we can best care for this this very unique resource that we have here in Florida.
That sounds good. I know it's going to be a very busy session, that the challenges of redistricting and the budget alone are almost enough to keep you busy the entire time.
Fair districting amendments were put in place very specifically to assure that that just that was occurring, fair districting, not favoring any incumbent or political party, not disenfranchising any minority voters, trying its best to respect natural boundaries, county lines, water boundaries, you know, that create these various districts. Now, my district, you know, if you recall, was basically the poster child for the redistricting amendments. Because I'm in portions of five counties. Now, I'm not a senator.
Right.
I'm a state rep. There's 120 of us, but I'm in five counties. I've got a sliver of Broward. I've got unincorporated southwest Palm Beach County. I've got Indiantown and all points west of the lake in Martin County. I've got the northeast shore of Lake Okeechobee up to and including the city of Okeechobee. And then I hook all the way northeast to include downtown Fort Pierce. It's an enormous and, frankly, oddly drawn district. Some would use the word gerrymandered.
Mm-hmm.
And as evidenced by the fact that in three of the county delegations I serve on, Martin, Okeechobee, and St. Lucie, I'm the sole Democrat in those three counties. So it seems like, you know, a very Democratic district was carved out and created very safe Republican districts surrounding it.
State Representative Steve Perman is the lone Democrat on the legislative delegation. He has a rural district encompassing the western portions of the Treasure Coast. Our final legislator to join us today is Tom Goodson of Rockledge in Brevard County. He's on the Judiciary Committee, the Joint Administrative Procedures Committee, and the Agriculture and Natural Resources Subcommittee.
Speaker Cannon's already informed us that a lot of times going to be taken up on budget and on the reapportionment or the redistricting, and therefore there's not going to be much floor time. So I'm not sure how many of my bills will be heard. That's going to be a question for everybody, I think.
Okay, but these are the things that are your priorities. So tell me a little bit about the wage protection bill that, as you mentioned, you've brought back for a second year.
Well, basically what it is, we have laws on the books, federal laws and state laws, that protect people that get shorted in their paychecks. And Miami-Dade has already introduced one, and I just want to make sure that counties don't end up with 67 different labor laws that that I, as a contractor working in five Central Florida counties, would have to know them throughout the state. I think it's a little unfair. So that's all. The law really just says supersedes anybody else that says that they're there. The law is there to protect employees already on the books. Why do we need something different?
And I see you've got something for physical therapy, too. Is there a problem in that area?
Well, the physical therapist bill, basically, the state gives these tests. And sometimes they're only twice a year. Sometimes you could have a person that's already graduated, working under a licensed physical therapist, living in, say, Panama City. But the test is not going to be until this is January. The test is not going to be until June. What the bill says is that she's able to work under another licensed person in order waiting for the test to be given in her area, and it's pretty simple. That's all that bill does is benefit the people that have gone through the school, have all the credentials, but yet haven't taken the state test that gives them the opportunity to work under a licensed person until they can get the test done. And I'm not talking about 6 years. I'm talking about months there, okay?
You also have a bill, if you could explain it to me, dealing with pharmacy audits.
Pharmacy audits is a strange little bill in a way. There's some, and really, Jill, I'm not that right now. I've been studying it, trying to get a lot more handle on it. But what it does is when you have bigger companies auditing small pharmacies, they can misconstrue facts that cost these people money and possibly could force them into a position where they don't want to stay in the business. So I'm just trying to protect the small pharmacists and get everybody on the same playing field. That's all it does.
So it just is an audit?
Yes, it's an audit that's performed that sometimes can be misconstrued and cause a lot of trouble when it's really nothing as bad wrong as it might sound. So I'm going to get a lot more familiar with that as the session goes on. It hasn't even been right now assigned a committee.
Okay.
So that might be one that just dies in all the other stuff we have.
Now, you also have a bill that deals with the determining of high water marks.
That would not be anything to do with tidal surges or coastal high water marks, because those are controlled by the moon and by storms. But if you think about rivers and you think about agriculture, sometimes you can have a good example be St. John's River. You know, I could ask a person, where's the high watermark of St. John's River? And during the flood stage, it could be all the way to 95. During the drought season, it's back in the river, which is a mile away. Now, the people that own those lands, like for cattle, raising cattle, I'm not talking about production of row crops because they wouldn't grow, but for the state to promote that the high watermark should be all the way at the Highway 95, there's the rub. There's the rub there. That's going to draw a lot of attention, and I'm just trying to get everybody to understand there's got to be a better understanding of high and low watermarks on, you know, lakes and rivers. But tidal surges and tidal canals, no, nothing there at all.
The solid waste management facilities.
Right now, they're re-permitted every 10 years. All the tests are done, everything's done. And if you're familiar with, if you know anything about a dump, they have these, what they call leachates. And they have them lined with clay or fabric that won't let the water, as the garbage rots, it comes down. They won't let the water go out into the what you might consider the natural water aquifer.
Mm-hmm.
And all I'm saying is, if the tests are done for 10 years, why don't we extend them and do them every 20 years? Because they're still monitored every annually and quarterly and monthly. All the monitoring and testing is still in place. I'm just saying, why are we forcing these people to spend this money in every 10 years when it would really, for business, be better every 20 years. But still the monitoring testing is still going on. It's just the permitting phase that I'm asking for an extension on.
Okay. And
these are already permitted. It ain't like I'm permitting new dumps. These are already in place permits.
And as you mentioned, monitored.
Yes, they're monitored. Yes, ma'am, by DEP, everybody in the world. A Class A or C or D landfill, like your Western Waste and like the ones you see on 95 and you're in St. Lucie County when you're going south, they're monitored constantly to protect the aquifer and everything else.
Republican State Representative Tom Goodson of Brevard County concludes this edition of Treasure Coast Legislative Preview. We want to mention once again that all of our legislators were invited to chat with us this evening, but things did come quickly after the holidays. As you may have noticed, this year's session is 2 months earlier than usual. That's because legislators have to approve new voting districts based on the latest census figures, and those districts need to be in place for the 2012 elections. Even with the early start, House Speaker Dean Cannon says the legislature has limited bandwidth for issues other than redistricting and the required passage of a state budget. State Senate President Mike Haridopoulos of Brevard County is even saying the legislature may skip the budget and end the regular session earlier than its usual 60 days. Haridopoulos says it may just be too early to have a handle on the state's finance to be able to set a spending plan. Legislators do have till July to approve the budget. Also, we'll carry the governor's State of the State address tomorrow beginning at 11 a.m. on our HD2 station. That's also where you'll be able to hear daily updates on the legislature's progress, as we'll bring you Florida Public Radio's Capitol Report each weekday evening at 9:30 on HD2. And remember, if you don't have an HD radio, you can always listen online at WQCS.org. For 88.9 FM, this has been Treasure Coast Legislative Preview. I'm Jill Roberts.